guys, welcome back to Skincare Anarchy. This is your host, Ekta, and I'm so excited because we have another episode in the Dr. Allenby Masterclass series, and I'm super excited because Dr. Allenby is with us today to launch this new episode off. So welcome back, Dr. Allenby. I'm so excited to host you again.
I am so happy to be here. I love chatting with you, Ekta. I think I learned as much as you get what I'm giving you, so...
Oh my God, you're too kind. Thank you. No, I really love our chats as well. And trust me, I am the one who learns a lot. And I know everyone listening out there, you guys always want to learn more about derm and all the myths out here. So I think today's episode is going to be really fun because it's going to be about a lot of aesthetic information, like tips that Dr. Allenby can offer us to really learn. But I want to kind of dive in, Dr. Allenby, and talk to you about maybe just get us started on a good note of like something we should all be doing for our skin. Because I think that's the big question that we always get.
Right. Well, when we kind of talked to what are we going to do tonight, and it really was like, we're actually having our 20th year anniversary for my office. And I'm like, you know what? I can easily come up with 20 reasons right off the bat of tips that people can use that maybe helps guide them, gives them a better understanding, you know, something that they need to think about when they're going to, especially a dermatologist who's doing aesthetics, or actually anybody who's doing aesthetics for that matter.
Yeah, exactly. Congratulations on your 20 year anniversary. That's amazing. That's really, really amazing. So
kind of shocking.
Yeah. And yeah, like that's what I'm excited about because these are the 20 things that I think everyone needs to know kind of, you know, about aesthetic medicine. And that's why I'd ask you the first question is really about, you know, what is that daily thing that we can do applicable to everybody?
Right. The foundation of my practice is dermatology. I'm a board certified dermatologist and skin is my love. And you have to start with the foundation, and sunscreen is number one, and it will always be, and it will, you know, be something that you'll always hear me say. You are wearing your sunscreen, correct? Because if you're doing anything aesthetic and you're not wearing sunscreen, you're just wasting your money and you're working against yourself, which let's work to make things easier for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is something that although we hear it so much on social media, I'm shocked because there are always people that are like, well, I don't have a sunscreen. What should
that
I
is
do?
Shocking.
Yeah, you know, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And really, sunscreen is for all skins of color. One of the aesthetic problems that we frequently see is dyschromia, which just means different skin coloring on a person. So maybe if you're African-American and you have a lot of hyperpigmentation, you don't want to have those splotchy looking skin. You want to have smooth, one continuous color, smooth texture. And that is very important to be wearing sunscreen for those reasons alone.
Right, exactly. You're right. I feel like for me, I have a tan complexion. I feel like every time I go out in the sun, there's like a new sunspot or something that pops up, or a freckle or something, because literally every time we go out into the sun, it's interacting with our skin. And that's one of the hardest things I think consumers have a hard time understanding, that it's not just about, oh, well, I'm going out on a beach day, you know, like a really like aggressive day where I'm going to be outside all day. It's about every day.
Right.
And use that SPF.
Exactly. So, I said, you know, it's, you put it next to your toothpaste in the morning, you put it on first thing, that way you don't have to think about it. And you really do want to put it on prior to going out and sweating or going to the beach. You know, that's so important. You know, and the other things the sun does, it's not just color issues. It's going to cause, you know, pre-cancers, which that doesn't seem to ring a lot of bells for people. But if you've ever seen anybody who's had a defect from a skin cancer removal, you would definitely change your attitude about protecting yourself. Because when somebody has a big, you know, chunk taken out of their nose, and I know that sounds disgusting, but nobody wants to walk around with the defect on the nose, or, you know, something taken out of the cheek and having problems like that. So this is like a much bigger foundation that people kind of realize. They're like, oh yeah, I'll do that when I'm older, but you have to start younger.
I completely agree. And I think that's the second point, is because I know right now, especially with social media being such a big part of just how people are consuming beauty products and understanding the field of dermatology, I feel like as consumers, I want to ask you, is it smarter to start younger?
Absolutely. And that would be my tip number two, is starting younger. Just one, allows consistency, and kind of like being that slow turtle versus the fast hare. You really want to be the turtle. The turtle is the one that looks the most natural, that gets things consistently done, and you end up having better results. Consistency, it's like dieting. If you're eating consistently well, you're going to feel better. The body will respond. It usually looks better. So, you know, there's so many facets to consistency. But when you can do it younger and you really start establishing these patterns and you really keep the skin in check early, that is really the the key. You know, it's hard when someone comes in and it's 70 years, I smoked, I drank, I laid at the pool, and they look like, you know, a train wreck. It's really hard to get them to not look like a train wreck.
Exactly. I can imagine. I mean, at that point, the damage is kind of done. Yeah. I'm glad that you said that, though, because I know a lot of the younger audience, they are actually getting more into, like, for example, injectables. Like, they're really getting into that. And that, for me, I always wonder with the injectable journey, where does skincare really fall with all of that?
Actually, there are some skincare procedures now that we do. There's one called SkinVive, and it is actually an injectable hyaluronic acid. Instead of putting it on topically like Ape Skincare, you can actually inject this and it hydrates the skin. So it's actually kind of already transitioning beneath our feet and we don't even realize it's happening. But it really is injectables, when they're put under the tissue, they can change the quality of the tissue. So hyaluronic acids can give you a softness to the tissue. When I use a product called Sculptra, it grows collagen in. It actually pulls wrinkles out and it gives a softening effect. So, you know, it really is an interesting thing how we think of fillers as a static shape changing or wrinkle lifting, but it really has a much more dynamic effect on the tissue.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing is, like, I think there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I often see, like, kind of like horror shots, you know, on social media of people that are maybe going to the wrong place, or they just simply don't understand, like, you know, where all of this fits in and how all the pieces of aesthetics come together and what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing, all of that. So I guess also my questions for you is, skincare as we know it from a topical standpoint, how do you think we should be approaching that if we are getting things like injectables done?
I think regardless if you're doing injectables, skincare is the foundation. And I say that, you know, multiple times over and over again, but it really is. It's like, if you can get a good palette and, you know, you're thinking of your canvas that you're going to work with every day. And, you know, when you kind of think about social media, you never see a picture posted of somebody who has all sorts of blemishes and marks and color problems. They look soft and creamy, and all the filters are to really almost airbrush them. So you do have to realize, people out there, that one, we desire this certain look, and it's really something our brain just loves. You know, it's a very attractive look to our brain. Nobody likes to see acne. Nobody likes to see cystic acne in particular, or scars on the face. So our brain likes a certain look, and that's what's posted out there. And one, filters are being used to create that. But if you can already do it yourself and you have a soft template that is, and I say the word soft because when you think of youth, you're thinking of more of a continuous evenness to the tone of the tissue, a soft, even texture. You know, there's not bumps or lumps or wrinkles or crevices. There's a real image that comes to mind, and it kind of has a soft connotation to it. Also, what's underneath, its structures, its fat pads, it's everything else. But, you know, if you can already help yourself and just use things like sunscreen every day, you can do gentle cleansers. You don't have to be aggressive, and every skin type is different. So those people who are really sensitive, you know, we have to be careful that they're not getting something that's going to make them red and irritated and kind of makes the situation worse. That's why my patients come to me, because they want to make sure that I guide them. I really only use medical grade skincare lines in my office. There are things people can use over the counter that are very nice, but they're the higher quality stuff you're going to find in a doctor's office.
Interesting. So we should be using then skincare alongside, regardless, basically.
It's like, it's a safe investment. You're investing in yourself when you're doing this. And it's a way to kind of say, you know, I'm going to go spend a couple $100 on a lip filler. I should at least have a topical hyaluronic acid that I'm putting on top to kind of prolong it and keep it soft looking. So it really is, it behooves you to kind of keep your investment safe.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense to me. And I've always been, you know, obviously I have a whole podcast about it, but I've been a big believer in skincare. So it really resonates with me, that advice. Actually, I want to ask you about, because a lot of times when we go to providers, we don't really know what to ask, right? Like, I feel like that's something that no one really educates about, is this idea of what you should be asking the provider. And right. I know the first time that we spoke, you had really gone into FI and like facial ratios. So could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Oh, for sure. It is kind of my mantra. So for those who may not have joined us on another episode, one of the most important things in aesthetics is really facial ratios and proportionality of getting treatments, in particular fillers, or when I use threads and I lift the face. I'm trying to create balance to the face, because our brains like a balanced look better than we are worried about wrinkles. And I know that sounds crazy, but wrinkles are secondary. When you're out of balance, you know, you really notice it. Like when you see somebody on one of the social medias and they look really weird, it's usually because their they're out of balance. So we use calipers in our office and we measure all the golden ratio of the face. These are proven scientifically ratios that give a more aesthetically pleasing look. They're used in so many different fields, not just in aesthetics. It's kind of like a mathematical ratio that puts science behind what you're doing. And a lot of people who are kind of newer into this business think what happened with aesthetics is it kind of was like, wow, that's a really easy way to make money. Let's all go into this. You know, so you have people that don't necessarily know what they're doing, whether they're physicians or nurse practitioners, PAs, and I'm not downing. There are wonderful ones of them that are not necessarily dermatologists, but there are people that are kind of going into maybe more for the financial gain and not for the beauty of what we do. And really the beauty is about delivering personality to the face, giving somebody something that looks elegant and also natural. And when you stick to ratios, you stick to these golden ratios that give all. And if you saw me talking here, my hands are like doing almost like a balance thing, you know, up and down. I almost get seasick when I look at somebody and they're off. It's just like, oh, this is horrible to see. It affects you, you know, does something to your brain that is just not a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you are so proactive about educating around that, because honestly, I kid you not, literally the other day I met a pre-medical student and it was so weird because we met when she started asking me a bunch of questions and she wanted to go into dermatology. And one of the questions she asked me was, would you recommend being a derm or a PA? And I said, nothing against PAs, but if you want to learn the real deep down medicine, you got to go the long route. You got to go into derm and you got to do it the right way. And so she was like, oh, you know, it was interesting to watch her as a young person trying to understand that. And it's not any hate to any PAs or anybody else. It's just the matter of the amount of knowledge that goes into understanding what you just explained. That takes time and the right training. And so I love that you said that. And I love that you educate about it. So important.
Yeah, I appreciate that because it does take a lot of time. I mean, again, we're having our 20th anniversary. I've been in practice really 30 years, but I didn't know a lot of this stuff when I started and I made mistakes. We all will in every walks of life. And thank goodness in my field, it's more forgivable mistakes and you can reverse them and things are not bad. But this is still medicine and medicine is a science and medicine shouldn't be just taken lightly and with like, hey, anybody can do this. Down here in South Florida, it's not so much right now, but we used to always have a problem with a lot of the hairdressers were doing cosmetic procedures in their salons. And it was like, what? Yeah, I know. There were some horrific things that came out of it. And it's just like an education is what people should be looking for when they're finding somebody who's going to be working on their face. I call it the moneymaker. Your face is your identity. And if you're not protecting your face, you know, somebody's going to take you for a ride on that one.
Absolutely. Now, I want to actually ask you about this because I know, like the face is something that I think all of us focus on, but also I think there are some definitely, and I'm sure you see these in your patients, people who think that there's like a one way to fix everything. So what is your advice about that in terms of people who have this opinion of there's a fix it for everything?
Yeah, I think it's also, this is a key point with age. When you get older, you realize if there's a lot of different things to fix something, that means there's not one great way to fix something, you know? Yeah. So you have to, I think when people come in and they're like, okay, if you do this to me, it's going to fix my whole face. It's such a bad setup for yourself because one, that may not be the problem. And two, you have to be able to rely on your professional to help you get to the right place. And, you know, one, if they're educated and they have the skill and you listen to them, you might be okay. But if you are just like, they might go, sure, let's go ahead and put this in there and you look weird. And at the end of the day, you're having to deal with that and go through all the undoing and potentially, or you're stuck with something for some time. But it really is, sometimes it's kind of like everything in life, you know, and I always say it's kind of like making spaghetti sauce. You're not just going to use tomatoes to make spaghetti sauce. You got to add the garlic. You have to have some olive oil. You got to have other things to really make it that wow that everybody likes at the end of the day. And it's usually wow in moderation.
Yeah, I know. And I think that's the thing is that I think it's human nature in a way for us to want this like one answer, right? Especially like when you go to a doctor, you're saying in your mind sometimes, just tell me what to do to fix whatever it is I'm here for. But there's just not one answer. There's no way. So
we are definitely a fix it and get to the next thing society.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want to ask you, what is one of your favorites or most liked injectables that you could recommend?
It's interesting. I have pretty much everything in my office. office available to me. And I will tell you, it really is important to have somebody who's had experience with every different potential product that is legitimate. I'm going to add that little word in there. My favorite has really been a product called Sculptra. Sculptra is polylactic acid. And what that means, it comes to us in a powder. It started getting distributed in 2004. And I latched onto this because it just was a game changer. It is a product that is a powder that we reconstitute with usually bacteriostatic water and some lidocaine. And when we inject it, you kind of see a shape change that is consistent with the fluid that's going in. The fluid absorbs, and then you actually grow collagen. So it's a collagen matrix or a biostimulatory product that actually grows your own collagen in, which a lot of people like that because it's your own collagen, but it's also a really natural, longer lasting product. So it's very economical for people. You can do a lot with it, but if you don't know how to use it, then you'll hear negative things about it. And that's always kind of been the case. It's finally, I think, gotten, okay, we're in 2024. So 20 years later, finally, it's more mainstream now. But, you know, back in the day, it got FDA approved for people who had facial wasting who were on HIV medications because these poor people just lost all of their subcutaneous fat, all their fat. So they just look kind of cadaver-like. And it was a godsend. I mean, it really helped these people. In my office, I immediately started using it in my population of people that wanted to de-age. And it was just like, we never had anything like it. And we actually really haven't had anything quite like that since. There's another biostimulatory product I use a little less frequently. It's actually a fat stimulator. And this one's called Renuvia. And this one is you put it in and it actually grows fat. But you got to be a little more careful with growing fat and then growing collagen. You know, collagen is everywhere on the face. Fat you want in certain places and you don't want to put too much in because it does last. Sculptra lasts. The fat product lasts a long time.
Wow. Yeah. And I think it's interesting because that ties back into what we were talking about, where you have to go to somebody who knows this balance. You have to, because I would have no idea as a consumer walking in and saying, I want something that stimulates fat versus collagen. I wouldn't know that. You have to sit down with your doctor and be like, what do I do? You know, like, what is the best treatment option? So,
which is a better question for a patient to come in is, what do I need instead of this is what I think I need to get?
Absolutely. Yeah. One thing I had seen, I think a week or so ago, I had seen a very interesting point made by a dentist, and she was discussing, you know, the role of what she does and then also like injectables. And I want to get your opinion about, a lot of people are doing so many things these days. So is there something about injectables and then also getting, you know, any kind of dental work done that we should know about?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of my top tips to my patients is, if you're going to get your dental work done, give yourself a 2-week buffer after your dental work before you're going to have any hyaluronic acid fillers in particular. And what that's about is that we have found that the mouth is pretty dirty, honestly. You know, we all kind of know that in medicine. I don't know if the rest of the population knows it, but the human mouth is not so clean. And what happens is some of the bacteria, especially if you've had dental work done, you might have exposed more bacteria into the surrounding area. That bacteria gets caught into the hyaluronic acid. And so it can get into the hyaluronic acid, and hyaluronic acid, the filler, is being placed kind of like a little implant. And so you're sitting there with an implant that has bacteria in it. And maybe it's okay initially because it's kind of being contained within that hyaluronic acid little pod. And as it starts degrading and going away, it all of a sudden, the bacteria starts getting more exposed to the tissue and it starts reacting. And then you end up getting these hot nodules on the face, which are serious, serious situation. I mean, we've all had somebody who's had a nodule. If you've been in practice long enough, you've had that. And that's just part of being in the practice, is you need to know how to deal with it. And it does happen. And it could be somebody who didn't have dental work, but you're setting yourself up much more at risk if you've had dental work done kind of coinciding with having your injectables. So just remember, the mouth is a little on the dirty side. Just give it a couple weeks in between. I think most people do kind of separate it out because they're worried it's going to mess up their filler because they're going to be getting pulled and pressure and everything else. That's not it. It's really the bacteria situation is the problem.
And that makes sense to me. Isn't that, there's like a saying, like the human bite is worse than a dog bite in terms of like the infection that you can get from that. So yeah, that's crazy. But I didn't know that about the filler and how it traps the bacteria. It's very interesting, but and good to know.
Yeah, it really. That goes to another tip. Just really make sure that your injector is experienced. They understand, God forbid, somebody does have the nodules. I've dealt with them. I know how to deal with them. I would say it probably would freak out somebody who's kind of new to the the space and doing these procedures, you know, it really can be quite alarming when you see some of the effect of them. And you really have to manage these very aggressively because you can end up having a wound on the face, like an open sinus that ends up scarring somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's dangerous stuff. I mean, I think, again, education is key, but it's rare for anyone to hear about these things. And that's what scares me about the era that we're living in with all these kids that are learning from social media, is that you guys don't understand. Dr. Allenby explained this earlier. Medicine is so interconnected, even outside of the realm, like with what you're talking about with the dental care. I mean, we learn in medical school that the bacteria in your mouth will go down to your heart valves and cause vegetations on your heart valves. It's a real thing. And you should understand and talk to your dentist or whoever you're working with for your work and discuss these adverse effects, basically.
Right.
So, yeah. I want to ask you, though, because this is actually very buzzy, and I see this a lot, is these before and afters on people's pages or whatnot. Now, can we ask people to see before and afters, like a practice? I mean, do people come to your office and ask for stuff
you
like that?
You know what? That you absolutely have to. Like, when I do my consultations, I try to show before and afters of what I'm talking about, just so they can even start grasping it. Because verbally describing something is reliant on me painting a picture for you to understand what I'm saying. The picture's worth 1,000 words, as they say so well. You know, you want to see current, you want to see relevant, you want to see more than one patient having something done. I think it behooves the person getting a treatment to really make sure that this is not their first week on the job and, hey, I'm their third person to get this product in their lifetime. You know, you really want to see their outcome and also see if it's the same style. You know, what, God forbid, I have a very different style of injecting than they're looking for. That could be, and I will tell you mine's the right style, but just saying. But, you know, it really, there are some people who do want something different out there. And I think if you're not able to produce, and now let me tell you, it's not easy to get people to sign off on before and afters anyway, but you have to have the patient population and you have to have the rapport with patients. So it already tells you, hey, these people are letting me show you their pictures and they're sharing with you their experience just visually, if nothing else. It kind of lends to, we have people who are trusting us and we're custodians of their before and afters because it's important. People really are proud of their before and afters, but some of them are pretty shy about it too, but you must ask for them.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you're telling us that, because honestly, I know that a lot of times it can be kind of intimidating for many consumers to think that, or patients to think that it's okay to ask, but it is okay to ask. And that's really good to know. And if anyone listening is, if you're considering, you know, getting any aesthetic work done, that's definitely something to consider. Totally okay if you're going to someone legit.
Honestly, it's not even just okay. You're the consumer. You're paying money. Ask to see before and afters. You really do want to get those because you want to see what their work looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. That makes sense.
I mean, would you go have a facelift and not have a before and after of their work, you know?
Yeah, exactly. No, it actually shocks me. It's like, because, you know, people will pay good money to some very shady places that are not run by a dermatologist. They're not run by somebody, but they'll just go in, spend their money, and they don't even ask questions. And I'm like, why? Why would you subject yourself to that? It just doesn't make sense, though.
You have to be your own advocate. You really do. Don't be intimidated. And there are some people who are very salesy out there and would make you feel bad about this. If they're making you feel bad about asking for before and afters, then I would just say, you know what? I need to think about it and I'll get back with you. But don't ever feel forced into the situation.
Absolutely. Now, I want to ask, because I know your practice is very cutting edge with all the wonderful equipment you have, all the options you offer your patients. And I want you to speak on this a little bit, if you don't mind, is this idea of what we should look for to identify a good diverse practice.
It's so interesting. I think for a lot of people, I really should look at this more like a business. I look at it as a lifestyle. I look at this practice as giving my heart to everybody every day. And a lot of people are doing it more purely based off the numbers and off of the dollar. And okay, so like we're saying, if you have a diverse portfolio of different injectables, one, as a provider, it actually costs me more money to have all these different ones versus if I just had one product only, I could probably buy it a lot cheaper because I'm only buying a single product line and they're giving me a huge discount to use that one product line. And I don't think it's fair. I need to have the tools that are going to give my people the best results. And it's not just the injectables, it's the neuromodulators, you know, the different toxins. I have four. There's five and there's one I think is not worth having in the office, but it depends on what works best for that patient. patient. Would it be easier for me just to have one? Yeah, of course it would. But I think you'd be missing the benefit for a patient at the end of the day. And this is something that it may end up costing me a little more in the front. But at the end of the day, when you have a better outcome, we're all happier. It's the same. I have several different laser devices, and some of them overlap on what they do. But it's like, maybe this one might be a little bit better for this person than this other laser, or this CO2 machine versus that one. You know, it is something that when you're at a place that is experienced and very diverse, it is because we've had a lot of different experience and we have strength in the practice. And, you know, we've made enough money that we can afford to get the best things for the patient at the end of the day. We're not just stuck with one thing. And it's kind of like, there's one of the microneedling radio frequency products that is being used on everybody for everything, and it's not appropriate.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense. And I love what you said. It's more of like a lifestyle for you, because I feel like it's such a sign of like an exceptional doctor to say that, you know, because it really is. I mean, you spend your life really helping people, and that's what this is for you, versus that moneymaker thing that was being, because I've seen that as well. You know, I think that's in every field of medicine. You'll find people that are just not there for the right reason. That's the bottom line. It's scary, but it's also something that I think you can spot if you ask questions, especially like as a person who might not be in medicine, you should ask more questions, because that'll help you spot that. So yeah, it's very interesting.
You know, and I think, you know, and you probably see this too, is people are intimidated and afraid to ask questions to their provider, their doctors. Yeah. There's a doctor who's confident is not going to have any problem with you questioning them. If somebody gets riled up over that, I would be more reluctant to have faith that they really have my best interests at heart personally.
Exactly. 100% agree with you. Yeah. Most doctors, if they don't know, we'll go look it up. You know what I mean?
Like, we'll honestly say, hey, you know what? I don't know. I'm going to go look this up. But you have this self-confidence that you're like, that's okay. I don't have to be perfect, but I can get there for you.
Exactly. Exactly. I'll shift gears a little bit and talk to you about your opinion about downtime and your tips about downtime, because this is something that obviously we all know is there, you know, as part of getting any aesthetic procedure. There's a little bit, maybe none, but some, there's a lot. So if you could talk to us about that, what should we be expecting as consumers, or how should we approach the process of after we get the procedure done?
Right. And again, it goes back to communication. Yeah. We really always need to be communicating what the potential downtime of something might be. With injections, there's always a needle involved. So there is always a risk of having like a bruise. And it's not so common anymore. You know, we have gotten ways and techniques of really minimizing downtime. And that is the whole direction of non-surgical aesthetic medicine, is really, how do we do this and really get great quality results, but also not disrupt your life, because everybody has something to do. You know, it's just the way it is. So it really is a conversation of, hey, the injectables, usually you feel a little beat up, but you don't look beat up. Then you go into maybe some of the lasers that you look a little beat up, but you don't really feel that bad. So every device has its good and bad, but again, goes back to the people that are using these procedures, these devices, these fillers. They have to know, you know, honest, I know it because we've done them on me. I don't do anything on somebody in the office that I haven't had done myself, because I want to know what it feels like. I want to know what it does. I want to know if I need 3 treatments or 6 treatments or 1 treatment. So it really is understanding and communicating what someone's going to expect. Like, even when I show my laser patients, hey, this is the before and after, I also show them, this is what you're going to look like in between. And you might look messy like this, and you have to be prepared for something like that.
That's, I love that you do that. That's great to know that, because I think that's the scary part for me. I haven't gotten a lot done at all from the aesthetic side, but that's always been my fear too, is like, what's going to happen before all the great results show up? You know what I mean? Like,
Again, if it's really something that has downtime, I usually have pictures of the downtime. So, you know, that's something people can ask, oh, how bad will I look? You have a picture of what somebody looks like kind of in that messy state.
Absolutely. Good to know. Knowledge is power. So yeah, I urge everybody to definitely follow that advice and ask, at least ask, you know, maybe there are pictures that can be shared. Yeah. So now what about, like, because I know, you know, with aesthetics, we love focusing on the face, but do you think that that's all we should be focusing on? Or, I mean, what are your thoughts around that? Because I feel like that's all we talk about is just the face.
I always laugh because I do, you know, women are face, men are body. But it really is, from the crown down to the toes are what we look at. At the end of the day, our aesthetic appearance is really the total package. And, you know, nothing is kind of worse than seeing really smooth, no wrinkles, very, very elegant skin on the face. And then you go to the neck or something and it looks like a different person. You know, things have to match. Our brain doesn't like when things don't match. And if somebody has, maybe they have a profession where their hands get really messy looking or dirty looking, or, you know, they work with ink and it looks dirty, our brain just starts going off onto these weird tangents. It doesn't like it. You know, if you have a chest that's really sun damaged, but the face looks good, it's like, that looks weird. You know, but it does. It really does. I will tell you, the easier areas to treat are the face, because we have more sebaceous tissue in the face, you know, oil glands. And so you heal quicker. We can do things more. As you get into the neck and the chest and the hands, you end up having slower healing because there's just less sweat glands and oil glands that are going to help recover. So it is harder to actually treat those other areas. So don't ignore them. One of the most important things is really the neck and the décolleté chest part. If people are not paying attention to that, and I will tell you, the hands are more disturbing for the person who's looking at them, meaning yourself. Like when you're looking down at your hands, you're like, oh, I got brown spots. I got spotties. I got, like, I can see all my tendons. I can see my veins, you know, which starts looking old. But it really, what everybody else sees, they don't see the hands as much as they tend to see the neck and the chest not matching with the face or looking really old and the face looks good.
Right. Absolutely. And I like that you brought that up, because honestly, I think when I'm looking at somebody, I'm always like, well, what is the rest of you? Because especially in the summertime, you can tell that someone's had a lot of work done on their face because everything else just doesn't seem to match. There's a real disproportion.
Like, this isn't going to get... I mean, you see that also with the body. Like, for some reason, it sounds so awful, but in Florida, especially probably maybe more like 10 years ago, you would see somebody who probably looks like they're in their 80s. Face is wrinkled. Things are a mess. And then you see their chest and they had, you know, augmentation, and it's these perky breasts that are with this 80-year-old face. And you're like, this is out of proportion. Things are crazy here. I can't grasp this. It's upsetting to see that mentally. It kind of makes you like, oh.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of a shocking moment. It makes you realize. But I mean, you know, I think that's a very interesting point though, about the body and the face. And, you know, in terms of proportions though, I mean, can we apply the same principles? I know you explained earlier about face proportions, but like, can we ask our practitioners, if I come to you, to tell us about like the body in comparison to what we want done on our face?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. With my body squat office, I mean, that is kind of what we specialize in, is trying to get the body into proportions that our brain thinks are attractive. And just like the face, everything. I mean, honestly, if you look at an orchid, you can measure out the golden ratio on an orchid flower. You can measure out always the golden ratio on people's bodies, on their shape, the hip to waist ratio. All of those things are so impactful because they imply health, they imply fertility, they imply where your position is in society. You know, we are definitely always kind of concerned on what our position is in society. So as much as it sounds so basic and silly, it really is very impactful on how you present yourself. If you have a thicker middle, it will start kind of lending you to more of an aged direction. That's just the way it is. You know, our brain likes a narrow waistline because that means you can have babies. If you're a female, if you're a guy, you kind of look like a square, you know, it's like a more of a snow cone square shape.
Right. Absolutely. And so that's good to know though, that we can ask that question, because I often wonder, we either hear about like plastic surgeons doing like body work, or we hear about just the face. And that's why I was like, that's very interesting to kind of consider both at the same time, you know? So,
yeah. I mean, it's a package. You're a whole package walking through. And I always just kind of think of myself as, okay, I'm walking into a restaurant. What are they seeing? And that's kind of what I think people really want at the end of the day. They're very shy to say that. When I walk through someone, I want somebody to notice me, you know? And as you get older, you get less noticed. So for you young ones, enjoy it, because we want to maintain that as much as we can. There's something very fulfilling about having eyes look at you and appreciate you.
Absolutely. And I know what you mean. I'm like getting to 40 and I remember being 20 something and taking them for granted.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, I miss those days.
I know, it gets worse, let me tell you.
Well, I want to actually ask you a little bit also about cool sculpting. I know we had discussed this, for everyone listening, in the Masterclass series. We have a whole episode around cool sculpting, but I really want to ask you, Dr. A, about cool sculpting in terms of what kind of treatment it is. Tell us a little bit about what we should expect. Literally, as consumers who want to get this procedure done, you might not walk in knowing a lot, but what should we know before we opt in for cool sculpting?
Well, you know, cool sculpting is a procedure that is designed to non-surgically permanently get rid of fat. And it's those little stubborn fat pockets that maybe you have around the waistline, or maybe you have it in the belly. You have like a little poofta sticking out at the bottom of the belly. That's the most common things most people see are abdomen, which is, you know, for a guy, it's usually actually more the flank. For a girl, it's more her front belly under the belly button area. So it's a procedure that takes about half an hour to attach a little device that chills the tissue. The tissue is chilled to a point where just the fat gets affected, and the fat is kind of stunned and injured, and it basically just absorbs. It just kind of basically dies out. And I hate to say that, like, you know, it really is kind of more stunned, and your body just ends up absorbing those traumatized fat cells. It is an awesome procedure, and it has been developed over probably the last decade to a point where you can get amazing, amazing results. Less than even a month, you're going to see changes with this fat that you couldn't get rid of any other way, which it's been really interesting with all the, you know, we are doing the skinny shots, I'm going to say it that way, in the office, and kind of combining these together has just been so fantastic, because even when you lose weight, you still kind of have these little stubborn pockets of fat. You can get pretty thin and you still kind of have a little bit of leftover flank area that is just hanging out there. And you're like, well, wait a minute. I mean, I'm down 30 pounds, but I still have the stuff that isn't going away, because your body is still your body at the end of the day. The places that are stubborn are still going to be there no matter which way you go.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've definitely dealt with that personally. And I know that a lot of times it's kind of scary, because when you have situations like that, you're like, well, should I go get plastic surgery? But this is good to know that no, you can turn to aesthetic medicine, and there are options available, you know, that are very
non-surgical. Yeah. It's probably about a half an hour treatment. Yeah. It really is. I mean, it's just revolutionary. I used to do liposuction and I stopped doing it because this was just so much easier on people. They could heal easier. They really had probably equivalent to not better outcomes. I was just like shocked on how amazing the results were without having to traumatize people, because the liposuction was really traumatic. I did not enjoy doing that procedure. It was just too much for people.
I'm sure a lot of you listening have seen the videos. Now, a lot of surgeons out there that post these videos, and it just, I don't know, it's so invasive.
It's gruesome.
You know?
Yeah,
it's gruesome. It's very invasive, very gruesome. And I think if there is an option, why would you not try that is my question. You know,
right.
Than,
I mean, if you really want to, you can always go get liposuction, but at least, you know, treat your body well, try to do something at least traumatic as possible first. And, you know, if you need help after that, you can do it. And there's less area to be treated, which is even better. So there's always different options. And it's just one tool that is just such a win-win, gets rid of that fat. And, you know, it's permanent, which is even better, because it's like, you know, if this were not permanent, it would be a little bit more like, oh, I don't know, but it's permanent.
I love that though. I love that that's available, you know, because there's a lot of, I mean, I remember when I was growing up, there were a lot of like girls like in my age group, and they would go down to like other countries, South America, and get these procedures done. And it was like, why? Like, why?
Right.
Don't do it. Try to do your homework first. But
yeah, I know. Yeah. And then you see them later and you're like, oh my gosh, what happened? I mean, there's always a honeymoon after surgery. Like, it's like the honeymoon phase, even like a facelift, you know, it's like, wow, for like about 6 months. And then you start seeing the aftermath and you're like, oh, I didn't expect that to happen. You start seeing the reality of what it is.
Exactly. No, exactly. It becomes kind of obvious too. I mean, I would be honest, like when people just go for that really invasive option, and then it's like you said, 6 months later, it becomes obvious to everybody else around you.
Yeah.
Too, just FYI.
Right.
Like,
and it looks odd, you know, because again, it's really hard to get the proportions right. It's not, the body is pretty amazing on its own.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now I want to ask, you know, for all the guys out there or anyone that's really interested in building like muscle mass, is there anything that you can recommend for that?
Well, you know what? It's actually with a body contouring, we have cool sculpting that gets rid of fat. But one of the coolest thing, actually, this is why I opened Body Squad, was that that you have now the ability to use electromagnetic stimulation. We use a procedure called Cool Tone. And what that does is it actually stimulates 100% of a muscle mass and you build muscle. So if, okay, say somebody's taking the skinny shot and they turn into not just Ozempic face, but Ozempic butt, meaning everything is just flat and gone. And that is one of the problems. We've seen people who've come in and they're pretty emaciated from so much weight loss. A lot of them have lost muscle mass. You can actually build up the muscle with this Cool Tone procedure that is a half hour. You do a couple a week. And it's something that you'll go on and off, because it's working at your muscle, basically, with you being totally passive. So you're laying on one of the beds and you're having this Cool Tone device attached to you, and it's stimulating your muscle for half an hour, and you're getting muscle strength. You're getting a fill of the space. So the space looks better and it looks more youthful, and it just kind of invigorates the area. And, you know, especially when we get older, you know, you kind of see guys do a lot of women with the legs, because a lot of times our quadriceps just, we don't use them enough. So the legs kind of look straight and don't have shape. So you actually can create body shapes with this muscle mass reduction, and you can actually, one, people are stronger and they're functionally stronger, but they also look better and it fills in the space. And so when they're kind of wrinkly, also it actually fills that space in. It's pretty amazing.
Wow, that's really interesting. Just curious, like, does it help you burn fat too if you do that? Because you're building
more
muscle
than likely
mass?
You know, anytime you build muscle, you're going to burn fat too. It's that is not so much the intent of it. It's probably more of a side effect that potentially can happen. But most of the time, it really is actually toning is what you're really seeing. So yeah, it could reduce the fat a little bit. I mean, if somebody were really a little fluffy, we'd probably do Cool Sculpting in combination with it. And that is just, I mean, people, if you go to the website, you can look at our before and afters. It is really amazing to see the changes. Or somebody's had a baby and they have that kind of bowing of the abdomen just left over because the muscle gets stretched and it's, you know, just wiped out. You can actually bring it in and give them that tightening effect, and they feel like they can get a bathing suit and look good again.
I love that. That's so cool though. That's just like a really cool way to like incorporate, in terms of like when we hear about like body just sculpting overall, like you always talk about fat, but nobody talks about that muscle component. So that's really cool to know, like you can combine that, you know, Cool Sculpting with the contouring. That's really cool. So
right. That was actually the reason I opened the practice, because I really like the combination. If it was just Cool Sculpting alone, I think I really want people to have that proportionality again. You know, I really want them to be filling in a space that maybe they never even had in the first place.
Absolutely. Now, this is something I'm really passionate about, and I've had the privilege of talking to a bunch of people in your office, and they are all very knowledgeable. So that makes me so happy to see that in your practice, having that. But in terms of the other professionals we might encounter that are maybe doing things like injectables or whatever we're going in for, maybe a routine treatment, like mid-level, what would things be that we should look for, like ask for in terms of their credentials and stuff?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really important when a patient comes to the office, they know that all their, I want to say, paramedical people, whether it's the physician, it's the nurse practitioner, the PA, down to also the medical assistants or the aesthetic assistants that are doing some of the procedures that don't require the expertise such as, you know, my level or my nurse practitioner's level. You want to make sure that they have been trained in what they're doing. And it's really common to kind of see places that I am going to kind of point my finger a little more at the medi spas. They kind of just hire whoever looks good and can kind of sell. You got to make sure these are still procedures and they have consequences. And I just saw a patient yesterday, beautiful lady. She had a treatment that it can be in the hands of a medical assistant, esthetician level person. You know, she was one of the places out there and they pretty much kind of wiped out her face. It was like, oh my God, you know, this is like scary. That if you don't know what you're doing, the depth of what you're doing, you have to be trained. It comes from the top. If I don't have my staff trained, honestly, you shouldn't be seeing me or my patient or anybody in my office. It really is something that has to come throughout the entire practice. You know, it's not something that's just, hey, you know, the doctor's trained and just you're a tag along. You really have to make sure that usually they'll have plaques and they'll have them on the wall so people can see them. But you can even ask questions and say, hey, can I see your before and afters? You know, because they'll have them also. They will have a lot of patients who they have a good rapport with who allow them to use their before and afters. And I think it's just as important that you credential them as much as you're credentialing someone who's putting fillers in your face.
That makes sense. And it's kind of like they have like their own portfolio of before and afters, what they can show you. This is what I've done. That makes sense.
Right. It's still a medical practice, in my opinion, even in the medi spas, and to not treat patients with that respect and to be trained and to be the best that you, you know, the ability that's out there, I think is a disservice to the community.
I completely agree with you. And I think that's something that it kind of gets buried, you know, under all the other stuff that we talk about with the aesthetic space, but we don't talk enough about credentials and really trying to vet the people that we're going to and understand, you know, where did you go to school or what did you go to school for? You know what I mean? Like, what's your training? So yeah, I completely agree.
Right.
Yeah.
Just don't rely only on the Groupon. If you're getting something really cheap, there's a reason it's really cheap, because somebody quality isn't going to be that cheap. And just remember that if you have a good practice, you don't have to be that cheap, number one. And two, you don't want to go to somebody who is just doing it to, you know, get a couple bucks off of you. You want a long-term relationship with your provider. You want to have something that you're going to come in and go, oh, this is a problem. Can you help me? Or solve problems together and get solutions together.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. Now, I want to ask along those lines about, I know we see a lot of, for products, for example, like if I buy like a moisturizer, there's like reviews on Sephora and stuff. But like, what about an actual practice? Is that something that we should look for as consumers? Oh, huge. Reviews? Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing. And it's also a scary thing for me as a provider. And I think that we're all going to have bad reviews out there. That's just life. You do have people you don't click with, personalities don't get along. And there have been people that we're just not on the same wavelength. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes people are doing it and they have buyer's remorse because of money being spent. You know, there are so many different things. And some people are going to just cuckoo at the end of the day. And it is unfortunate because everybody would love to have 100% everybody loves me and it's unicorns and butterflies, but that's just not realistic. At the end of the day, it is our job always to try to understand what somebody's coming in with and try to understand their point of view if something's not the way they are seeing it. But I think when you see consistent good reviews, that is kind of the key. If you're like looking on Google and you see 98% of the reviews are wonderful, and then you get one that says, oh, this is the worst person in the world, just take it with a grain of salt. It's kind of like when I look at Yelp, I look at everything and I'm like, when I look at this person's, all their other reviews on other places, they badmouth everything. That's kind of what I've noticed. But, you know, it's almost like, are they getting paid to badmouth? I don't know. Or are they just disgruntled?
I think they are though sometimes, honestly, because they're just some jerks out there. You know what I mean? Like,
Yes. I wish humanity would be a little bit better than that, but you're right. There are just some people that are jerks out there. And overall, I personally have such lovely, wonderful people. And I do get a lot of them I know have reviewed me, and I so appreciate their nice, kind words about me and my staff. Because if we're not getting those, one, it's very important for me to address the situation, make sure that things are getting done the way they should be getting done. And I use the reviews to make sure that the practice is in the right spot. But I think it's unrealistic. And if you see only glowing reviews, I would be a little concerned that maybe somebody's padding the situation a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. And that makes sense. But I'm glad that you're highlighting that, because it is something I've always wondered as well. It's like, you know, should we be looking at the reviews or not in the aesthetic space? You know, I know there's stuff out there for everything, but it's definitely something I think consumers should be paying more attention to. And yeah.
I mean, I think they look at them pretty good. And I think, honestly, reasonable people will understand it. And those are the people that I want to see in the practice anyway.
Exactly. Now, I want to ask you, because I know there's, obviously, we have TikTok, we have Instagram and all this, but what are some great ways to get information? Like, you know, if you were to recommend, like, to somebody who's maybe exploring the world of aesthetics for the first time, you know, what should they do? What are some things that they could do to educate themselves?
I think there are so many avenues of information. It actually, I think it's kind of overwhelming for most people. I think most of the traditional magazines that you're going to see on the newsstand, they give very factual, real information out there, and they can kind of help give some clues to it, you know, and then you have to start maybe narrowing down practices possibly that you are saying, hey, they kind of are the same mindset as I do. Let me look at their website, read some of their information, see if I like some of their before and after, see if we are starting to talk in the same talk tracks. You know, these are people who want the same outcomes that I'm looking for. So there are just so many different avenues. And I think everything out there, there's just so many overwhelming things. I so appreciate your podcast because you have amazing questions and you're very almost like an investigative reporter, almost like, hey, you know, what about this? What about that? And listening to some of these podcasts and hearing philosophies of how things are done instead of just like, oh, this has to be done this way. You know, there are so many options out there. And some things I use YouTube to look up. Sometimes I'm looking up things by the magazine. Sometimes there's some really good websites that, you know, are associated mostly to the magazines that are out there. You know, that's going to be the most common direction is kind of linking up with them. You can ask your peers, what are you guys doing out there?
Yeah.
Are you seeing somebody that you like? You know, is this person reputable? You know, have you ever had any problems? What happens when you do have a problem? Do they listen to you or do they tell you, oh, that's not our problem? So I think just being your own advocate is kind of the best direction and really researching something that's important to you and not necessarily just going out and spending a bunch of money thinking, hey, this is going to fix everything. Being realistic is so important.
I completely agree. And I think there are definitely, I know before I even launched the podcast, for me, New Beauty was a big one. I noticed that you're a top doctor with New Beauty and rightfully so, but that's a great one.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great reference for you guys out there if you're looking for, because New Beauty does a lot of cool stuff with like really spotlighting, you know, the real deal kind of people. And so,
exactly.
Yeah. So that's really cool.
Yeah. It is. It's like, that's one of the magazines that you're going to see on the newsstand. That is one of the top ones. It is definitely more of a national line, you know, and that one is more geared to aesthetics. So that one is one of my favorites. And I am proud that we've had a great relationship with them so for so many years.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want to round out the interview, Dr. Allenby, and ask about just, I guess, your general advice, you know, for anybody who's considering coming to your practice, because I really do recommend it to everyone. Like if you're in the South Florida area or anywhere near the South Florida area, you guys have to go check out the practice. Like you really do. So I would love for you to give us some wisdom about just approaching the whole process of getting any aesthetic work done at your practice, if you could offer some words of wisdom.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, this is a joyful, fun part of medicine and enjoying the process, knowing the plan, being part of the plan, getting part of the planning process, really having fun with this, because it really is such an honor and such a privilege that we get to do these things. 15 years ago, a lot of this stuff wasn't even available. So it really is something that is just so cool and so exciting and always changing. Being with people that are kind of on the forefront of things and being exposed to things before maybe the other groups get to see some of these awesome new treatments coming out. Like it's shocking some of the stuff that comes out. It's just like, you're blowing my mind out there, you guys. You know, the people that develop these things. But it really is, enjoy the process. This is a process. This is something that should be a continuous, goes back to that turtle. We want to be the continuous plod along. And that way you always look good. You're always in a natural, beautiful state without having to like kind of rework everything. You know, life has its interruptions, but overall, if you are doing the self-care on a regular basis, one, it's gratifying, and two, it really is fun to be part of your own plan at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I really, really, really recommend going to obviously your practice, but also because of that mindset that you have about the way that you practice, the way that you've trained your staff, and the way you guys approach aesthetics. I mean, I think that for a lot of consumers, and I'm one of them, it's a scary place if you don't know anything or if you're coming into it new kind of thing. So yeah, like go somewhere where you're going to be truly treated like family.
Yeah.
And yeah, like talk
I
to
mean,
you. Like,
yeah. Again, these people, I so respect them and they have just become great friends, great family members. And that is just like, for me, it's as thrilling every day as it was 20 years ago when we opened the office.
Yeah.
It really is something that I really respect these people. They've made it a wonderful process for me, and I hope that we are always making it that for them also.
Absolutely. And again, congratulations on 20 years. That's a huge, huge milestone, and you're just such a rock star. So seriously, congratulations.
You.
And for everyone listening, again, you guys have to check out Body Squad. You have to go see Dr. Allenby. If you're looking into aesthetics and you're in that area, I'm telling you, right, this is a great place to start. And I mean, when I'm back in Florida, Dr. Allenby, I'm going to be coming to see you for
you
sure.
You better.
Yeah, I will. You know I will. So I'm really, really thankful to you for always, you know, sharing such wisdom with us and so
much knowledge. So thank you. And for everyone listening, if you have any questions at all, please chime in, let us know. We will definitely pass your questions to Dr. Allenby's team and we can get you answers. So let us know if you have any questions. But thank you, Dr. A. This was wonderful, as always.
Oh, thank you, Agatha. This is wonderful for me too.
Thank you so much.